Good morning and welcome to our meeting. Glad you all got here safely. It is 9 a.m. on December 5th, 2023. In time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. To my right is Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President. My left, Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary. At the main table over here is Scott Jones, Chief Financial Officer. Colin Willenrod, General Counsel, is here. Melissa Collins, Commissioner of Executive Services Director. Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, at the entry table. And Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board, running the show for us on the computers. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and CEO, General Manager, or his designee to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. At this time, I'd like to recognize the meter reading team, but Scott Jones will do the presentation, and we're just happy to see all of you here.
Thank you, Commissioner Wolf, and good morning, commissioners. We had a bit of a unique month. Normally at this meeting, you would recognize an employee of the month and occasionally a team of the month. And we, just because of logistics and some timing issues and things, we decided to pause that and push it into January. And that afforded us an opportunity on the agenda to do something a little bit different. And so we've been talking as a leadership team for a few months now about trying to do some kind of recognition for the meter reading group. I get the privilege of having these folks in my department and in my division, and I am thrilled that they are. They're a fun group to work with. We have Sherry, who is our senior manager over there. Sherry has been here for a few years, and Wendy, where is Wendy? Hiding in the back, of course. Wendy is a new manager over the meter reading department. And Wendy, how long have you been at the job? A year and a half or so? Something like that. This group has done some really cool things in the last year, and we wanted to call them out. So there's three things that we have been focused on a lot. One is safety. As you might imagine, we've got 35 or 40 people getting into a car every day and driving around the community and getting in and out of their cars and walking through yards and dealing with dogs. And so safety is hugely important for this group. And Wendy and Sherry have done a great job of doubling down on the importance of safety. And as you know, safety is our number one value. And I'm really proud of this group and how they've responded. In particular, we've had a pretty significant improvement, I think, between last year and this year in vehicle incidents, just a refocusing of that. And so I'm really proud of that. That's hugely important for us, of course. But there's a couple of operational things that we track. One is, are we reading on time? Because if we don't read on time, we're delayed in reading, then it delays billing, it delays a lot of other things, it creates some issues and hurdles for the finance and accounting process. And so we have worked really hard to start reading more on time, and we and TrueCheck, I think both, Sherry, you can confirm it. I think TrueCheck, which by the way, a reminder, about half of our meter reading is done with our team and the other half is done by TrueCheck on under contract. And Sherry manages the TrueCheck contract and partners with them on that too. A lot of what I say today applies to TrueCheck and their performance as well. I think we have been roughly on time this year. TrueCheck has been about a day behind, which is pretty good, much better than it has been in the past. And so I want to applaud that. And the other thing which is kind of interesting is we get a lot of news and comments and curiosities about estimated bills. And there's been some interesting back and forth with estimated bills in the past. You all are well aware of some of the history. We have been really focused on reducing estimated bills. That means we need to be fully staffed. We need to read every read. We've got 300 350 to 400 reads per month, 100,000 per month. And so you're talking about 4.5 million reads a year. And so even if you get a 10% number on that, then you're talking about, you know, a few hundred thousand estimated bills. Every time we have an estimated bill, it creates a billing adjustment for later. It increases call center activity and all those things. We have this year, we just looked at the data yesterday, through November, we are at less than 1% of estimated billing. And that's across our team and that's across the TrueCheck team both. And I want to mention TrueCheck too, because Sherry is the one that negotiates that agreement. She collaborates with TrueCheck. She holds them accountable and builds the incentives in that contract to hold them accountable too. So, and in fact, I think we are less than half of 1%. And so we're talking about for 11 months for our meter readers and TrueCheck meter readers, we are hitting about 99.5% reads on what is going to be north of 4 million reads. And so it's an extraordinary achievement. And so we wanted to pause and take a moment to recognize them. They're doing tremendous work. Sherry and Wendy, who wants super recognition and is standing behind in the corner. Wendy has done an amazing job and Sherry has done an amazing job. And it's one of those moments where I could try to take a little bit of credit, but I have zero to do with this other than get out of the way. Sometimes the best thing you can do is get out of the way. And so we've gotten out of the way and let this group kind of run, and they've done an amazing job. And so I really want to do that. We want to try to get a picture. We're going to do some recognition things. They had a breakfast this morning, delicious biscuits and gravy. So we had a breakfast this morning to celebrate. We normally do it in the afternoon, but we're going to do it in the morning just because we want these folks to get back out and get on the road too, so we can keep those numbers up. So we'll try to sneak a picture if we can corral everybody, and I'd appreciate your patience for that. We'll let these folks leave. But with that, I just want to say a heartfelt thank you to the group. They've done an amazing, amazing job. Sherry, anything you want to add? I know the answer, but Wendy, would you like to add anything?
Yeah.
Please.
Could you call me out? Good morning, commissioners. I don't know if I need to push this or not. But
no, pull it down.
Pull it down. Okay.
It down,
yeah. Oh, there we go.
Close to your
mouth. Morning. Thank you for letting us be here. I did take over this group about a year and a half. I inherited an amazing team. I do not read the meters. They do, and they do an outstanding job. So thank you very much for taking the time out of your meeting to recognize these people. They are amazing. And in my most humble opinion, the best team at PUD. Thank you very much.
If we can, let's try to gather up here and get a group photo. Yes,
we may want to make some comments.
Yes, please.
I don't want to put my felt commissioner.
No, I do too. So.
All right, go ahead.
Commissioners,
you have a comment?
It was signed us.
Okay, I do. The work that you're doing on the cycles and the reads is phenomenal, because that has a direct impact on what our customers think of the utility. You know, if your cycles are too far out of sequence, oh my heaven, Lord, you raise the rates because it's out of sequence. So got a lot of background at the utility, and I can understand what this means and how hard it is to get there. And number two, I'll shut up.
No, keep going.
Number two, do we have one or two that would like to share some interesting experience in reading meters? I don't want, because now mine is just very, I had a obese pug and that was Bubba. And that was, fenced backyard, and that's where my meter is.
Did you say blubber?
Bubba. He looked like a Bubba too. Anyway, Bubba, the readers would come in, they finally learned, you know, little old pug growled. But the meter readers learned that if you walk up to him,
he'll roll over and want to have his belly rubbed. This is the truth. So I appreciate their patience and finally learning how to deal with Bubba. Anyway, if anyone would like to share, because there's some really unique things that, in terms of getting to the meters and...
I think the young lady in the green shirt would like to share, right?
I've never read a meter.
I thought you were looking like you have a story to tell. Somebody has a story
on.
To tell.
I know that there's...
Who has a story to tell?
Gotta be there for it.
You were at my house. Somebody here was at my house yesterday.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I do recognize. Thank you very much.
We come across some really strange things, and I could probably write a book of all the different things that I've come across. But one thing that I remember is I was reading the meter, and a guy comes running across the street. And he starts screaming, it'll be gone, it's gonna be moved. And I'm like, what? I turned around in the back of a pickup truck, there was this python that was, it took the whole back of the bed and it was in a cage. And I'm like, okay, that's really interesting. So I sat and looked at it for a minute and then went and read the rest of the meter. So that was one of the interesting things.
That's the only interesting bizarre. Yeah. Anyone else? One more.
We love stories.
They're cool stories.
The python was named Bubba.
So my name's Dane Horton. I read Arlington to Darrington. So I'm the one that goes far out there. And it's not as much of a story, just being a meter reader, you get to see some really cool things. And sometimes it's a python in a truck. Sometimes it's animals or something strange like that. And sometimes out in the far reaches of Darrington, you go to a little place called Sauk Prairie, and it's a dead end. You go far past the log mills and everything like that. And you end up just in this little valley surrounded completely by mountains. It's nothing but fields. And this job really gives you the opportunity to just sit down and really take in the beauty of the county. And so it's really nice to just be out there. And no matter the weather, yeah, you got to deal with days like this sometimes, and that's one thing. But other times you're just sitting there in snow and watching nature. And that's my office. So it really, you know, it gives me a good feeling just to be able to do that, you know.
Yeah, it's great to be outdoors.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, be careful today. I understand there's flooding that zips around over the highway.
I'm careful about that.
Yeah, I think I averaged 40 miles an hour getting to work today from Edmonds, but
so I had a couple comments.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Logan.
So first of all, you know, congratulations on doing so well against your metrics. And, you know, obviously all of you are critical to our revenue cycle. Without the work you do, we don't pay our bills. But the other thing I think that is incredibly important, and you guys know this, is most customers, their interactions with the PUD will be through you. You'll see them as you're reading their meters. So all of you interact with customers far more than everyone else in the room. So, and that's so important. It's so important for those experiences to be positive. And so I really appreciate the work you do with that.
Yes, thank you. So anybody else have a story? Please share. We just love to hear interesting stories.
Shame on you, because I know you got a lot of them.
I know I have to make our path safer for our meter readers. We have an interesting path to our meter, and it goes around the house. And all the stumps and things there, you know, I hope you don't trip. Because, you know, safety first, always. Well, any other comments? You, Scott?
I agree with all your comments enthusiastically, and I would just add to Commissioner Logan's point that we talk about this a lot, but this group is very much sort of the point of the spear when it comes
yes.
to out in the community. So they see a lot of things first. They have opportunities to come back and report things that other divisions and departments don't know, and so it's very valuable beyond just the meter reading. So, and yes, they are filled with interesting stories, which they'll be quiet about today. But believe me, this group offers, you know, quite a few interesting tales occasionally.
Oh,
so
yeah,
for sure. But no,
some of them
you.
Not probably really
Perhaps not. But thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. We're awfully, awfully proud of this group.
So now,
I'm just going to move this out of the way.
If you will indulge us.
Should we do it on the stairs, outside, or in here?
Whatever.
Do it right here. Do it in here.
We can do it in here.
Just meet you guys at the front.
All right, folks, make your way up. Let's do a quick photo. Thank you.
I can talk tallers in the back.
You know, if you're a tall one.
This way?
No, I can do this. Yeah, great here. Thank you. Just start with you in the middle.
Allison.
Yeah, sorry. My fault. Dane, you got to come back here with Brent.
Everybody's single file behind me?
Yes.
No, that's exactly it. It could work.
There you go. You're going to look taller.
Come on, get in, get in. Hurry up, hurry up. When you run to the this is going to be a wide angle shot.
It's going to be a wide angle shot. Yeah.
We're going to have to do a row of people.
Yeah. Front row, take a knee.
I guess we are. You going to take a knee?
Welcome.
Come on.
Totally.
Wait. You're a little taller than me.
Yes, in here.
So where do we look?
I don't know which one. Oh, we've got. Look at Aaron because it's going to go in the highlights.
Which guy?
All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. New reader.
All right.
I still am hungry to hear about it.
That's why I thought I would. You all in with a restaurant or
conduct business here.
We had breakfast.
And I thought I.
Thank you.
Really, yeah. Your offices are still
hiding. So where's your area?
Still hiding in the basement.
There's plenty up there, probably, too. I don't know if it's there yet or not.
Right. Windows.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Be safe. Be safe.
It's wonderful when we get to recognize the whole team.
Thank you for that. That is it's an awfully big team, and it certainly can be a little cumbersome to try to get them all together and the logistics of it, but we wanted to pounce while we had an open agenda. With that, we'll continue with CEO updates. Aaron Swaney for media.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
There's a room like the media guy. I will say that, you know, Commissioner Olson can probably attest to this. The estimated bill fiasco we had in media about 8 years ago was not fun. So to see them doing such a great job of keeping estimated bills down is.
But we weren't as bad as some of the utilities to the south.
Definitely not. No, we just got raked over the coals.
The stats are phenomenal.
All right.
That's not a good motto, though. We're not as bad as.
Yeah, we will use that as a key message for sure. All right. So
before you get started, I wanted to mention that this article in the Beacon was awesome about Lyman, Nick Belisle.
Belisle.
Fabulous article, very well written.
Yeah, and this was a lot of work. So this was actually came out of our media day that we held this past summer that Kelly Stickney and myself put together. And we worked with this reporter, and he wanted to do kind of a day in the life look at alignment and just kind of talk about what they do from storms to everyday work. We actually hooked them up with Nick. Kudos to Nick for all the work he did with the reporter. Multiple interviews with him. He actually came out to a site in Arlington, took some photos of Nick and his crew working. It was just a really nice way to show kind of all that they do. And it was really just a really great story. The helicopter that crashed into the lake, Kelly worked really closely with Department of Ecology and the city of Everett. And actually we did a yeoman's effort on this. I think we did most of the effort in terms of talking to the media, and we did put the press release out. So thankfully the helicopter got taken out and removed, and there was really not much damage up there. So it was really a positive story. Just a little bit of just a kind of roundtable of everything that's going on. The our Herald column that we had run in November was really talking about our 75th anniversary coming up. We've got a lot of stuff that's coming up in 2024 to kind of celebrate 75 years. You'll be hearing more about that kind of as we roll it out, but we've got some prize drawings. We've got a bunch of historical kind of stories and a website information we're putting up. So really excited about that. This was just kind of a way to kick it off and kind of let our customers know that we're going to be in a pretty celebratory mood in 2024. We did a Power Grid. We worked with Power Grid International on a story with Onassis, which is a cybersecurity partner that we're working on for SAP. We worked with them on a press release, put that out, and then Power Grid picked it up and actually wanted to do a story with us. And so we kind of worked together on that. And it's a case study of like how we work with Onapsis to build this really strategic security model and tool as we roll out Connect Up. And then additional coverage, you know, storm season's back. We had a little bit of a storm in early November. This past weekend, we had a little bit of storm scare, and it's really nice to be able to get out there and just talk about preparation, help our customers know, you know, here's what you need to do to make sure that you're ready if the lights do go out, and really pushing people, of course, to the outage map and the outage texting capabilities, and really just kind of hitting that a lot. And then, of course, conservation got the Smart Energy Provider Award again, which is great. So a little bit of media coverage on that as well.
On the Everett Herald, the 75 years, well, that will acknowledge that we were a water utility.
Yes.
It's 75 years include water. Okay.
Yeah, it did mention that, that water was first, and that the 75 years is actually for electric.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, 75th, this is the 75th year for the electric. Water was 3 years ago.
4 years later.
75, yeah.
Oh, it came after.
Before.
No, I thought it was before.
Before.
Yeah, it was before.
Okay, I'm off that topic.
Publications. I worked with Steve Hinton at Tulalip and our Energy Storage and Emerging Technologies Group on this story for the NWPPA Bulletin. This project is really awesome, and we've done a lot of work with Tulalip tribes on this project. It's really in its kind of infancy and beginning stages, so there'll be a lot more to talk about as it gets kind of lifted up and started, like, you know, once the ground starts getting broken and things like that. But right now, just being able to talk about it and write this story for NWPPA was a really good opportunity, I think, to just talk about the partnerships with the tribes. Yeah.
I think exciting about this project is that they're planning a large area, you know, doing these first pieces, but sort of interesting to have a section of our little long-range plan for a microgrid.
Yeah, there's a lot of complicated aspects to it, right?
Really.
And it's neat how it's kind of phased out and how they're thinking about it in those phases.
Yeah.
And I think the expertise that we bring as the PUD and being able to talk to them about it is critical.
Yeah.
And so it's a great story to be able to tell.
So a part of this is using labor up from tribal members too, isn't it? I mean, working with some of their labor.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, in doing the story, I was out there with their emergency management manager, and he was talking about what they would have to do to kind of make this happen.
Thank you.
But they are in charge of the labor and the project in terms of supplying.
Yes, correct.
What do you mean?
We're just partnering with expertise.
Okay, we're not bidding anything out that we would give preference to.
I don't.
Local
that's
contract.
Above my pay grade, but
no,
I don't
no,
think so.
No, it would be us.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're not doing that. So,
And then Bus ads. I wanted to talk a little bit about the bus ads you'll be seeing in 2024. You know, budget cuts being what they are, Wendy had to actually take about half of the budget that we had for the previous year and make it work for next year. And I think she did a tremendous job. We're going to actually have not that many less or fewer bus ads. And we've actually changed to some of these back of the bus ads, which so folks who are sitting in traffic can see these. And she did a really good job, though, kind of just not only designing the ads, but like actually working within her new budget and getting more than we expected. So just wanted to point that out.
Who actually produces those ads? Because they're quite large.
Yeah, so Wendy does all the design work, and then it's actually Evertrans that does the printing and makes sure that they get on there. Yeah. And then finally, I really wanted to kind of point out some of the work we've been doing on social media lately. Krista Rasmussen leads up our social media group, and she's just done a tremendous job. These were kind of a couple ones that I think that really showed exactly what we try to do with social media, about spotlighting our people and the work that we're doing out in the community. This was the final poll of the Camino Island Transmission Project. Kelly and Krista were out there at basically midnight taking these videos, taking these photos, turned around the next day, posted them. We had thousands of interactions, and also we had about 50,000 impressions between both of these posts. And the other one was Mike Black, and just kind of highlighting our people who are out there, especially during storm season.
This is PowerPoint. I mean, this is Facebook.
Yeah, so both of these are Facebook, but they actually went across all four of our social media channels. So Facebook, Twitter, or X, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And so Instagram, actually, the one on the right was a small Reels kind of video just kind of playing, and people could watch it. And I think that got something like 20,000 views. So very cool.
That's grabbing the younger. Probably the younger audience too.
Yeah, for sure. I think Instagram's probably a little bit of a younger audience.
Great.
Facebook might be a little older, but yeah,
I think
yeah. I've been trying to hit all of our customers on social media, right?
Right.
That's all for me.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Jason Zaskowski, I think, is online. He was under the weather today, but he's participating virtually, and he's going to give us an update on the Columbia River settlement agreement. Some of you have heard the news, so Jason's going to comment on that. Jason, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Well, good morning, commissioners, and for allowing me to come to you virtually here through the ceiling. So I'm sure, as you've heard, there's been the ongoing litigation around the last biological opinion and environmental impact statement issued by the federal government back in 2020 around Columbia River system operations. So there's been ongoing litigation. That litigation was stayed. And then the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service began a mediation process with the six sovereigns involved there in the U.S. government. And then last week, a document titled U.S. Government Commitments in Support of the Columbia River Basin Restoration Initiative and in Partnership with the Six Sovereigns was made public. And there's been lots of clearing up articles on that, and some letters from folks in Congress to the administration in regards to that. The settlement doesn't have the details we need to do a full assessment of how this might impact our operations. And so we are seeking clarity on a number of items. Those include, what are the cost commitments for BPA? There's, some fairly substantial work included in the settlement and costs associated with that, but it's not clear how much of that, BPA will be responsible for. What the settlement means for future litigation. So we've been involved in not us specifically, but there has been a fair amount of litigation around the Columbia River system operations over the years. So kind of understanding what this means for litigation forbearance and litigation going forward. And then how the settlement would impact current operations. The document also talks about development of replacement resources by the six sovereigns and DOE and working with PNNL on that. So we're trying to understand how those, you know, that have traditionally done kind of power planning for the electric system would be involved in that. So all the details are really important for us to understand on this and how this agreement will impact our operations, customers, community, you know, in future contracts with the Bonneville Power Administration. One last thing that I will add here is PPC has been discussing with BPA how this could impact the future contracts post-2028, the possibility of a five-year contract due to the uncertainty that currently exists around the settlement. So we'll see, you know, how that all evolves and hope to get more clarity on the settlement and the details there. So with that, I'll open it up for any questions or if anyone else in the meeting room there wants to add anything.
Do we have any other comments from people who are here today? No? Okay, I guess. Oh, here we have, yes. Okay, great.
Kim Johnston, I'm the Director of Government Relations. I think we're bringing this to your attention today just to acknowledge this is going to be a topic of conversation for the industry. We're a beat here. You're going to be hearing about it in our trade association meetings, and we just wanted to let you know right now there's probably more questions than answers. We're working on finding those answers, and we're all going to have to just breathe and be patient in this process and find the information we need to assess how it's going to impact us, our customers, and our community.
Complicated.
Very complicated.
And so thank you for all
of what I've read. It's interesting that the settlement is made with only certain parties at the table. I have not known the same.
Jason, I have a question. So I've read the last couple of weeks of pretty enough articles, and I actually scanned the 35-page document or whatever. I don't know how many pages it is, I'm not sure. But I can't, do we know whether the goal is to replace the capacity the snakes have, the ability to put out a lot of energy over, you know, several days? That's the same peaking, or just the total energy, which is a whole different story.
Yeah, that's a great question, Commissioner Logan. And the in the, you know, the settlement agreement that has been made public, it is not clear. And those are the types of things that, you know, we're trying to seek more information on and get more clarity on. You know, we do know that only Congress, you know, can act and essentially kind of approve the removal of those dams, the Lower Snake River dams. So, you know, that hasn't changed. But as far as exactly what they're trying to do with the 1 to 3 gigawatts that's talked about in the settlement, that's not clear.
Well, it does say renewables, right? The gigawatts are renewable.
Can you repeat that?
The gigawatts are renewable. What it doesn't say is that the base load.
Yeah, they will. They would be, I would assume, renewable resources there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I guess we have any other comments or questions?
Keep us apprised.
Okay, thank you very much and appreciate the opportunity to give you an update.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Kim. Next is the APPA deed grant, Sherry Miller. Sherry?
Sherry, I've been sharing this story with a lot of people.
Good.
My contact list about this.
Excellent. I think it's going to be really great. So I'm Sherry Miller. I'm a customer and energy services program manager. And with me is Shelley Pattison, senior manager for strategic partnerships. And we're here to talk about the APVAD grant. It's on. Sorry. So the purpose is just to let you know that we applied for this grant and we were awarded the grant and $75,000. And it's with APPA, and DEED is a program within APPA. And DEED is about funding different grants for out-of-the-box projects, unique ideas that haven't been done that can benefit utilities across the country. So it's very exciting to get this award. And the title of the grant is Community Tree Planting to Mitigate Air Conditioning Loads and Engage Customers, with the purpose to develop urban forestry program to mitigate the heat island effect in Snohomish County and reduce our increasing AC load by funding tree canopy projects in strategic locations. We have a long list of program goals. These are our highest priorities: to cool our urban areas with increased tree canopy to reduce our climbing AC load. Currently, about 60% of our customers have air conditioning, and it's predicted by 2030 that about 75% will, and by 2040, 98.5%, very high number. And we're looking to reduce stormwater runoff impacting water and wastewater energy loads, partner with customers on their urban forestry projects, mitigate line tree removal, and educate customers with the right tree, right place. Customer engagement by offering another opportunity to support clean energy, and develop a program model that other utilities can replicate, providing processes and a toolkit. This one is a really high priority for DEED. They look specifically for projects that there can be a direct benefit to other utilities. So by us forming and working through the program model, developing a pilot and testing it, and getting a toolkit of a program plan, et cetera, tools that they can use to just be up and running, was a huge component in us receiving the award.
I'd like to add one more bullet point.
Of course.
That would be to include this in the education program that we do with the school children.
Excellent.
Let them know about
it. Yes, that's excellent. Thank you. And then lastly, develop a methodology for calculating KWH saved per tree. And this one also had a lot of attention from DEED, and we'll be using the U.S. Forest Service database, which is massive. So it'll be very exciting. And the program development team is myself and Jeremiah Gardner, one of our very own arborists here at the PUD. He's here today when we get to questions, if you have any tough tree questions. And then we have two external vendors for Terra Northwest. They're a national urban forestry specialist in all types of forestry development projects, large and small. They provide expertise in customer outreach, planting, and tree maintenance education, and program development, evaluation, and project management. And then Earth Economics is developing a specialized heat map with layers specifically to trees, tree canopy, urban heat island, et cetera. There's about six or seven primary layers. So we'd like to introduce the new program that's coming from the grant. It's called Tree Power. And TREE is an acronym for Tree Relief for Energy Efficiency. And for Tara, Jeremiah, and myself put together our heads and just worked out the ideas that we wanted in a logo to tell the story just in a quick picture. And then Wendy and Corpcom helped us, and she developed this really beautiful logo that we're very proud of.
That is just for our PUD, it's not nationwide.
That's Tree Power. This is us.
You know, it's brilliant.
Thank you.
Hydropower, nuclear power. Solar power, wind power, and now tree power.
Tree power, yes.
Thank you.
Did we apply for this grant, or were we just seen as a utility that might meet there?
We applied.
We applied.
Yeah. Grueling application. It was very detailed.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So what's unique about our program, because there's other utilities with tree programs, but this one is different, and this has two components. It has the tree project funding, and this is where we will fund different projects coming in that are supporting targeted communities and customer greening projects. And we primarily see public agencies and nonprofits applying for these. And funding can be prioritized, like we can focus on income qualified communities, grid constrained areas, equity, and of course, urban heat island effect. And then the second piece that I think is the uniquest part is the customer donation fund. So customers can participate and get involved, and it will be a voluntary donation fund that they can apply for and donate. And so that provides an ongoing funding component to the program as well. So this is our timeline. We were awarded the grant and notified on April 27th this year. And all of our contracting was completed. We contracted first with APPA and then the vendors, and we completed that process September 6th. And then there's three phases or parts of this. And one is the grant design and research, and then the grant program design and program implementation. So the first one started right after contracting in September and will primarily go through the end of the year. And this is where we have identified potential grant applicants and potential funding partners, and developing program objectives, research, and program design. And then also what started in September and will go through April is the grant program design. And this is the funding application and evaluation process being defined internal and external, our outreach recommendations, developing tools and training for our applicants' projects so they're successful, developing our KWH methodology, and establishing the customer donation funding process. And then the program implementation will be April through the end of 2024. And here we'll assemble a review committee, we'll complete development and launch our grant pilot. 2024 is the pilot. And then also develop our deed deliverables. And the most exciting bullet here in my mind is that our target program launch is on Arbor Day, on April 10th of next year. So what better way to honor Arbor Day than to launch a tree program that will benefit our customers and the utility, and we get to work in partnership. And then the first round of applications, the deadline will be June of next year, and then the review committee will review for 2 months, and then have their award decisions by August. And that's it. I'm sure you probably have questions. We can test Jeremiah too.
Well, I think a lot of us are interested in the locations, where you, you know, strategic, what the word strategic means. these projects will be chosen by decision on what are the strategic locations.
So there will be a evaluation matrix that we evaluate all of the different projects that come through. And then the ones that can touch into the low income communities would probably get more points and get a little more attention from us. Definitely projects that can help with the urban heat island effect would be another one. And so we'll create these different, in the matrix, different topics or points that would be our criteria.
Yeah. When you start looking for volunteer groups to support this, I think you'll hear from a number. I know League of Women Voters has a major emphasis on tree planting. Mm-hmm. And so already they're asking me where, you know, and I said, well, you just have to wait until we, not me, but until the community decides.
Yes.
So yeah, it's very exciting.
Thank you. I think the main criteria for the projects, because the customers would be able to fund, is that they would have access to where these trees would be. So if a pocket park or a courtyard or an area of trees are being developed, then they would have to be able to go there, take their grandkids, I help get these trees planted. And so that's a huge criteria, is just that they can have access. It's not a private courtyard or something they can't get to.
That's wonderful. Why does it serve as a model for some municipalities?
Why does it
do, no, quote this,
oh,
serve as a model,
yes,
for some of our municipalities to do their own,
yes,
projects?
Absolutely. And other utilities, because Deed was very interested in this so that we could.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And then other utilities can take it into their program structure as well.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Can you give some examples of a kind of project that potentially could qualify?
There's one we're tentatively talking about, so this is nothing for sure, but there's a solar array that's Walter E. Hall Park, and the city has to do a planting in that area, so that would be a public area that could qualify for something like this.
So it's not just shading buildings that are conditioned load, it's also building canopy.
Yeah, it's
public places.
It's all hard spaces, so pavement, buildings, and then the trees can't be too close to the buildings, just because we want big trees like
right.
Douglas firs and high kilowatt hour trees, and trees that will grow quick and cool.
Yeah, and not good power.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we're not
anything under the wires.
This is great.
Yeah, well, it'll be really fun to watch this as you grow it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you, Sherry. Next up is Sean Huntstock, who's doing an audit update.
Thank you, commissioners. I'm Sean Huntstock, senior manager, controller, and auditor. Typically around this time of the year, we provide commission with an update on the status of various audits that have occurred throughout the year, and most of which have been subject to audit exit conferences that I know Commissioner Wolf has participated in all of those this year, but you've all received also copies of those exit materials. Just quickly go through these, but certainly let me know if you have any questions. So the first set of audits that we'll talk about are all conducted by Moss Adams. They are a third-party contracted audit service. So they have completed the 2022 financial statement and federal single audit. We have a contract with them to perform that audit on behalf of the Washington State Auditor's Office. So during those two audits, the financial statement and federal single audit, they noted no exceptions and unqualified opinion on both of those audits. So unqualified means a clean opinion on those two audits. They have started also now, are in the midst of the 2023 financial statement interim audit field work. So that's currently ongoing, and they have, Moss Adams has completed the VEBA, the Voluntary Employee Benefit Association Trust financial statements for 2022, and also have an unqualified clean audit opinion, you know, audit comments related to that audit. And then there are various federal programs that receive review from the Washington State Emergency Management Division, as well as FEMA itself. So you can see the results of the different audits here. We have also Leslie Moss, our senior grant coordinator, in the audience. If you have questions about any particular ones of these audits, some of these take a very long time. The first one,
2014,
the April 2014 OSA landslide. So we just received about a month or so ago the final closeout letter from FEMA on that grant. So again, various states of review and audit for these FEMA grants, and we have on the next page other newer FEMA grants that are currently ongoing, including most recently the November 2022 storm from last year. We also at the bottom have a coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds. That is the utility arrears grant that we received money for last December, as well as June of this year. The next set of audits are all conducted by the Washington State Auditor's Office. So I mentioned earlier that Moss Adams performs our accountability, or excuse me, our financial statement and federal single audit. So that's done on behalf of the PUD, but also with agreement by the State Auditor's Office. The State Auditor's Office has the audit requirement, but the PUD has the option to contract with Moss Adams, so, which we do. And when we do that, then Moss Adams audits us, the Washington State Auditor's Office then audits Moss Adams to make sure that the audit that they conducted were in compliance with auditing standards. So the second and third item on this table then are those two audits that Moss Adams conducted and the State Auditor's Office reviewed the work of Moss Adams. In addition to that, the State Auditor's Office, this is not contracted, but the first item on the list is the accountability audit. The Washington State Auditor's Office under state law has to perform the accountability audit. So they're currently going through that. It tends to be a little later audit. So right now the State Auditor's Office are conducting the accountability audit. And one or maybe more of you may have received an invitation from the State Auditor's Office to interview with them as well. They interview various, not only the commissioners, but managers and ELT level individuals throughout the PUD as well. Next is the various Energy Conservation Act, energy renewable requirements. Again, these are all subject to the audit exit conferences that have happened this year that Commissioner Wolf attended. So again, across the board, no audit exceptions noted. You know, they had nothing but very, very good things to say about district personnel in not just the performance of the programs, but also in working with the State Auditor's Office. And again, more upcoming audits. This is a new slide this year. I wanted to look ahead to 2024. So again, this is all from the audit exit conferences that we've had this year. And these are the, again, the planned audits for next year for the various renewable energy and energy compliance, low income assistance, and so on. These are all audits scheduled to be completed in 2024. And as noted at the bottom, these are all in addition to the financial statement, federal single audit, and the accountability audit. So we are reviewed and subject to various audits on an annual basis. And again, happy to say that everything is noted, that we are in compliance, and there are no exceptions and no just clean audit opinions across the board. Any questions?
Let me make a quick comment before jumping in, Commissioner. The one thing that has been remarkable to me after being here now almost 4 years is we are an intensely audited organization, to say the least.
That's good.
It does take a lot of time and resources and effort behind the scenes to make all of these things go smoothly. That's a lot of the sausage making that happens behind the curtain that people don't see, but it is a big effort by a lot of folks, and not just on our side, but a lot of folks participate in a lot of those audits around the other divisions in the organization. I can't guarantee you going forward that we won't have audit findings. They are more common than this, but we have had an extraordinary history of clean audit opinions and a minimal, if any, audit findings and notes. So I'm awfully proud of the work that the group does. Since I have the microphone today, I can offer the kudos because a lot of these things flow through our side of the house and through Sean and his team. So I'm awfully proud of the work they do. But yes, we are heavily audited, and so far so good.
No, not any audits, it's just follow up. Heavily audited, and there's a lot of in kind labor costs.
Yes.
And then we pay for the audits.
Yes, that is correct.
That is my only comment.
You know, my comment is, well, congratulations, Sean, to you. You get great audits. You know, I work for a public entity, and audits are very, very and they consume a lot of staff for our whole organization. And so it's impressive to have a clean audit. It's even more impressive in my experience to have clean federal audits.
Yeah.
The time and effort challenges, things like that, are you know, it's easy to make an honest mistake. So thank you for all your work.
I just have one question. And I think there's there's a good answer to this, because I know that you have reasons for everything you do, practically. What is the advantage? What is the advantage of hiring Moss Adams rather than having the state auditor's office do?
In my experience, prior to the PUD, was exclusively with the Washington State Auditor's Office. And with that background, I would say that it's more of a collaborative process with Moss Adams than it may be if we use the Washington State Auditor's Office. So just as a quick example, if there are new accounting requirements, new pronouncements that come out that don't have a lot of guidance for how to account for certain things, we can have the conversations with Moss Adams, and they engage in that conversation, even though ultimately they will audit the results of that conversation. And it's more likely to happen with an external contracted auditor than with the Washington State Auditor's Office. That's been my experience.
Yeah, I agree with everything Sean said, and I would say one other additional comment. One of the values, and I've always been in organizations that have used larger regional or national or international audit firms, and there's a depth of experience and knowledge that typically those firms have, and that's not saying anything about the Washington State Auditor's Office, but you can't expect that state entity to have the depth of knowledge that some of these national and regional firms do. And they've got, Moss Adams has clients all over the country, and so we get to leverage some of the benefits of that knowledge as they audit other companies in other states and other types of industries and things and other lanes within the electric and water industry, and they can bring some of that best practice and expertise back to us. So I certainly think that there's value in paying for that, in my experience.
Well, I'll undermine that, because in my experience, sometimes state auditors are very young. Sometimes they're actually learning from the entity they're auditing, how that business works.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we hire Moss Adams, we get experts and expertise.
Yeah, our partner on the Moss Adams engagement, Olga, she is a nationally recognized partner industry, and then in many years our concurring partner, who is Julie, who is home based down in Portland, she's the industry leader for Moss Adams for the energy and electric industry. So they're very, very knowledgeable folks, and those two partners in particular provide a lot of value.
Yeah. I'm glad I asked the question, because I knew you'd have good answers, and you did.
So. Yeah, that's a great point, Scott. Thank you. That's likely specialization or industry knowledge that the state auditor's office would have to contract out for, but that comes with the engagement that we have with Moss Adams, that specialization. So it's a great point.
Mr. Olson?
Commissioners, in terms of the board's responsibility in terms of oversight, in fiduciary oversight, I was very pleased when the utility moved to a two-tiered audit, because I believe that we can reassure our customers and those that we're serving that it is far better than just the state.
Okay. Got my answers, thank you.
Yeah, there's typically, historically, people view the auditors' relationships as, they can be viewed as adversarial, but that's not at all what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, we want to get it right. We want to report correctly. We want to account and finance and publish to the community and the public the right information. And so having a collaboration with people that are genuine experts in that field is really what we're looking for, because we're aiming to get it right. We're not aiming to hide something or anything like that. So it's definitely, we're all aiming to land at the right answer.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Madam President, we take a short break.
Okay. 5 minutes. We'll be back at 5 after. Okay, we're back. And Scott?
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Last up today is a strategic planning update from Laura Lemke.
Morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Laura Lemke, Strategy and Performance Planning Leader. Say that three times fast for the district. And I'm here with the first of what I anticipate being a regular quarterly update to you on strategic plan implementation and progress. Thank you. I was hoping to just get away with yelling. This is mostly an informational presentation. We've been here a lot over the last few years, and this is a follow-up on the strategic plan that you approved in February. So our purpose today is to give you that update on the strategic plan implementation and context for the plan for quarterly updates moving forward. We're not asking for any action from you today other than your feedback, your questions, your engagement, your input, etc. Stop me as I go along if you have questions. I don't stand much on formality. So when we spoke in January and we reviewed the draft strategic plan and then you approved the resolution or implementing the strategic plan, we agreed on these next steps. The first one was that we would assign leadership, timing, and resources, or determine those three things for each one of our strategic objectives and initiatives. And that included prioritizing them within the prioritization of them having made it to the strategic plan, assigning them resources and leadership and teams, and that we would also stand up underneath it a performance management and process for assessing our progress for the plan. And we have put a lot of time and effort, a lot of people have put a lot of time and effort into doing that over the last 6 to 9 months. So I'm here to bring you up to speed and set, as I said, that precedence for how we'll do quarterly updates moving forward. So briefly, just to put all of our heads back in the game, I try to remember I'm probably the only one that carries all 60 initiatives around in my head with me. So for context, the strategic plan elements that are the kind of primary foundation of the work that we're doing are our purpose, our values, and our commitment. Those are the enduring fundamentals that sort of define who we are, how we behave, what we believe, and they're the filters that we use to make decisions. We articulated a vision statement underneath them that we would be the utility that delights our customers and energizes life in our communities. And underneath that, we have 5 strategic priorities. And those strategic priorities define the areas of focus that we believe we need to lean into to be successful in achieving our vision and fulfilling our purpose for our communities. Those priorities are supported by strategic objectives, and each objective is supported by a series of key initiatives and activities. That's sort of the structure, just to review that and give us context for the rest of the conversation this morning. So after we met and we finalized the strategic plan, the executive leadership team worked together with input from the strategic planning team and other subject matters experts across the district to prioritize the 60 initiatives that were in are in the strategic plan. And we assessed them on kind of 2 axes. The first one being the benefit and the value to the district, which could either be that it brings us really fabulous things and helps us capture opportunities, or that it mitigates a risk or a challenge that either is a big deal or has the potential of being a big deal. And then the other side of that was the urgency we felt to get it done and whether or not we had flexibility on the timing, right? Things that need to happen now needed to rise to the top, particularly those that have big impacts for us, and those for which we know they are important and we need to get them done, but we have flexibility on what that timeline looks like, got prioritized differently. We came up with a 3-category prioritization, which essentially informs the resources that we're assigning to the initiatives and the timelines that we're asking initiative leads, who I'll talk about more in a moment, to meet. And so some initiatives are essentially being told you have all the resources you need to meet an aggressive timeline. And I see my quote fingers, all the resources you need, like within reason, right? But ask for what you need to meet an aggressive timeline, and that those requests will be reviewed in context of budget restrictions and resources. And others are being said, you know, we will start the work on this initiative when the resources become available, when they come off of critical or work that's being done either within the strategic plan or other operational realities. Then we also assigned some roles and responsibilities. So the executive leadership team has a collective responsibility with the commission to be the overall owners and sponsors of the fact that we have a strategic plan and we are holding ourselves accountable to it. and establishing district-wide and community-wide, and to a certain extent, ownership of that plan and what it means for us. The ELT in particular then is responsible and accountable for ensuring that decisions and actions align with our values and commitments and the strategic plan priorities, as well as then aligning the organizational structure and resources with it. And then also fostering cross-functional collaboration to ensure that we are all working together to make this happen. For each one of our strategic objectives, there are 15. We assigned an ELT objective champion to serve as the executive to go between the ELT and the implementation team to help them with the conversations that needed to be helped or had, elevate key accomplishments and achievements to celebrate to the ELT and the commission, as well as identify places where we might need to lean into prioritization or resource assessment. And then for each of the strategic initiatives, there is a singular initiative lead that has been assigned. I will say right now, there are some initiatives that don't have an assigned initiative lead because when we did the prioritization exercise, no work is really being done on them right now. And so it seemed inappropriate to assign a person to then have them feel bad that they're not making progress on an initiative that we're not asking them to move forward right now. And initiative leads may or may not be responsible for actually doing the work. So in some instances on larger initiatives, they're serving as much a program manager perspective, like thinking of the Connect Up program as an example, where they're sort of making sure all of the right people are talking to each other about all the projects and work that's happening on an initiative. I'm gonna pause and see if there's questions.
I just have a question.
Yeah.
And it's one LT member that's assigned.
Yes.
For over general oversight of
for each objective.
Multiple LT members.
Right.
One.
Yes. There is a singular ELT objective champion and a singular initiative lead for each initiative.
Thank you.
There are clearly teams of people working on many of these initiatives, but one person is accountable for tracking and reporting progress and that coordination and the collaboration that needs to happen. Any other questions on the roles and responsibilities piece? So we tend to refer to them then as objective teams, and that's the champion and the leads. So if I use that phrase moving forward, that's what I mean. So in March, February, March, we asked the champions to work with the initiative leads to put together an initial action plan, particularly focusing on the most important and urgent initiatives, and to articulate either the action, like what was already planned, because some of our initiatives were things that were already in flight. And so this is really just writing down, making it transparent, the work that's already happening. And in other places where an initiative was mostly new work, developing an initial plan for what that initiative might take in terms of key actions and the resources required, and what the timeline might look like. We also asked people to lean into telling us about resource constraints or gaps so that we could have the conversations that were needed to make sure we had the right people or having the right budget conversations.
I have a question.
Yes.
So under things like challenges or risks, are the answers to that somewhere? I mean, are those public? Like, what did they actually think were the challenges or risks?
It is documented for each one of the initiatives in terms of when I look at my action plan and what's going to take to get this initiative done, these are the challenges and risks to success. And we can talk more about how we might incorporate that into the reporting to the commission.
That wouldn't have to be worldwide, but maybe that would be interesting.
I concur with that. Not a lot of detail, but just in general, I think it would be important for us to hear that.
Sure.
About you, do you?
Yeah, I agree.
Be interested.
And I think sharing some amazing things that have come out, some wins and some challenges too. Just a flavor of going through.
All right. Just so you know, we're interested.
I'm glad to hear you're interested. I think it's the most interesting thing. Yes, so at the end we leaned in for this quarterly report to key accomplishments and activities, but we can also for future ones talk about challenges and risks to success as part of that quarterly report as well. We did lean on them, or not lean on them, but encourage them to think inclusively and build a big tent for their planning conversations and those collaboration conversations, because I'm sure as you are aware from reading the strategic plan, many of our initiatives are sort of interrelated and interdependent. And so it requires that initiative leads are working together to create timelines and action plans that take those dependencies into account. So those initial action plans were developed in April, and the ELT kind of collectively reviewed them, had a conversation about what they looked like, and then asked people to start moving. They asked for some changes and asked for people to start moving them forward. So based on that, we've put in place a quarterly reporting process. The Q3 report that we're reviewing today is our second try at this, not try, but like the second time we've done it. The Q2 one was really still as much about conversations about were action plans appropriate or not, where did we need to be having further conversations. So this one felt like the right time to bring a quarterly report forward to the commission. That quarterly report process asks the initiative leads to update for any initiatives that are in flight or that have near-term planning going on, where they stand, any changes to that action plan, updating risks and challenges, reporting on their accomplishments so we can celebrate success, and giving a preview of the coming quarter. I also worked with each one of the objective champions and their teams to define KPIs for the objectives and where those KPIs exist. We will have them to report to you in January. In some places, we're still developing the data set that we would need to calculate that key performance metric or report on it on a regular basis. And stealing my own thunder for further along, we anticipate including KPIs in the quarterly report to the commission, starting with the Q4 report in February. Questions on that work or the performance management system?
Let's see. In this section, you talked about prioritization.
Yep.
And I don't need detail, but
yeah,
I'm assuming that budget constraints may have some, play some role.
Yes.
In how those prioritizations are handled.
Yes, there is, but there.
A yes is okay, because I'm assuming it does.
Yes. I'll talk a little bit more about it as we talk about next step looking forward, but yes, budget and people resources are very much a part of that conversation about both how they got prioritized and whether or not that prioritization is still appropriate.
Yeah. And that would be part of the challenges. Those would be.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to note that as we got into the implementation part and we assigned initiative leads and conversations started, we realized that the way we had worded a few of our strategic initiatives wasn't as friendly as it needed to be to ensure that leads that were working on them and the average employees really understood what the initiative was about. So we have reworded some of our initiatives. It's on the following slide. I won't walk through them. We worked with the ELT champions and the initiative lead teams to reword those. The initiatives are the same functionally. We just made the language friendlier, with one exception, which is that generative AI kind of burst onto the scene, I think like days after you approved the strategic plan. And in conversations there, the ELT decided that we should add a strategic initiative under our CPUD priority. So it's under the objective to increase organizational alignment and effectiveness. We're adding a strategic initiative to develop and implement a strategy to capture the opportunities and mitigate the risks of generative AI tools.
You know, I think that's wonderful that you guys edited it, because it needs to be a fluid document. I mean, so many of these are very static documents, and if you proceed without realizing there's need to change and use. Do the whole project based on what you agreed to 2 years ago or 5 years ago. The outcome will be far better if we mold it as it goes.
Yes. Well, yes. And when you're in a room with the initiative leads and they say, I'm not really sure what this initiative means the way it's worded, it indicates that we needed to go back to our notes about how we developed the wording for that initiative and give it some new phrasing.
Yeah.
And so this slide is mostly just to make it transparent where those edits happened. We will make them, or I worked with Wendy Paris, she's already made an edited version of the strategic plan, and assuming that you don't have any concerns about these changes, we'll get that posted to the public website so that we have, you know, a consistent internal and external version of the strategic plan initiative wording. And I want to note that the one that is struck out on the right-hand side, essentially the conversation was that employee value or value proposition piece is part of many of these initiatives, and pulling it out separately felt artificial. Okay, so looking forward to Q4, which we're in the middle of. I believe it's already December, and Q1 2024. I just want to bring you up to speed on the plans and the plan for quarterly reporting in 2024. So we are continuing to develop this management system. We're walking. We're hoping to start jogging here shortly and get this into play as part of one of our strategic initiatives around prioritization of projects and planning for resources. The existing IT project governance board has been expanded to be an enterprise project governance board, and they're taking on a role of helping us both order and prioritize the projects that are coming out of the strategic plan and just regular day-to-day district operations and other planning efforts like the like the integrated resource plan and others. There is coordination to your question, Commissioner Olson, with the budget and financial planning office about how did it integrate with the 2024 budget? And how that was established, and how will we continue refining and making more sophisticated that process moving forward into 25 budget planning in 26.
Well, and it could go both ways. Mm-hmm. When the priority that might mean that the budget needs to be adjusted for that, right?
Scott, you heard her say that, right?
I did.
Yeah, just checking.
Oh, was that a bad thing?
No.
No, I wrote it down. I'm stamped.
Oh, Tony said budget increase.
There's no taking it back.
Yes, that is part of the ongoing conversation.
I just think it's a given.
The initiative leads continue to do an amazing job collaborating and coordinating with each other to kind of continue refining the action plans that they put together, which is why if you hear hesitation from me about sharing them publicly, it's because we're still sort of in this initial phase of figuring out how they all come together and refining that order of operations and interdependencies. And so there's a lot of opportunity there for synergy and a lot of opportunity for making sure that we do things in the right order so we're not causing rework or spending resources that we don't need to spend to do something to then have to do it again or do it multiple times in different places. The quarterly review process is, I think, a continual improvement project, if you will, right now. We do the quarterly review. We ask for feedback from the initiative leads, the ELT, and now you today about how that quarterly review feels and how the conversations went. And then we're making changes for the next one. And I figure we've got another couple to do before we really find that sweet spot of what a quarterly review will look and feel like long term.
Just one example of how the budget will be affected is the creation of this new generative AI program. Mm-hmm. That's super important, and it's going to cost money.
Very likely to cost us money.
I mean, I think so. Maybe Christy can say no, it won't.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Christy Sterling. I'm the Chief Information Officer, and you ask a very important and timely question about generative AI. As that evolves, it's certainly something that we have our eyes on, and we have a generative AI team that's really looking at how we incorporate this responsibly into our future. I would say, will it cost money? The short answer is yes. If we think about generative AI as many, many tools and many, many opportunities, those are all things that we have to judge over time. It won't necessarily be something that occurs in a single expense to the district. It'll be incorporated into our normal procedures as far as evaluating, determining the best use cases, moving forward in a planned and responsible way, both from a budget and the support and a cybersecurity standpoint. So incorporating all the things that our team does well. So short answer is yes, there will likely be some money that results in that.
And it will be under the rubric of collaboration and coordination, really.
Absolutely.
Everything you're doing.
Absolutely.
And thank you for speaking.
Thank you.
Thanks, President.
Laura, before we leave this slide.
Yes.
You know, this is my opinion, so I mean, this is my fellow commissioner's saying, but if a quarterly update is too onerous, in my opinion, feel free to update on the frequency that works best for you and your team. So I know it takes time to do this, so.
I think that's a question for you. Let me come back to that question in just a moment about quarterly versus some other interval. We are establishing a quarterly process internally to hold ourselves accountable. And my intent right now is that the quarterly review process is all of the teams reporting in, there's an ELT conversation, and then there's an update to you, which is not an additional ask of us because it's the same conversation we're already having and bringing that to you. If you would prefer to see me on a less frequent interval, I'm happy to come less frequently.
I concur in terms of our oversight role. I would concur a longer period.
Okay.
So that I could perhaps see trends or a substantial accomplishment. So I don't know what.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking
6 months.
Yeah,
a year?
Twice a year. I mean, I think we want some time for, you know, some accomplishments to happen.
Yeah, they're not going to happen.
Visible or. So 3 months seems like it's.
You'll hear from me a lot. And you'll be very tired of me.
No, that's not it at all.
Yeah, I'll be.
Do you want to try twice a year for 2024 and see how that feels?
If it makes sense, if it makes sense
to staff. I mean, I like to see progress that is bits and pieces of progress. I can't put it all together.
Okay.
So if that's I would say every 6 months, however, as staff feels based upon my observation, that annually is appropriate, and I'm comfortable with that as well.
One quick comment. The part of what Laura is talking about is we are getting leadership updates, and there's an accountability for our champions at the executive level and down on a quarterly basis. And so I don't think, and Laura just alluded to this, I don't think there's a high bar on preparing that work for you since we're already putting it together from a quarterly basis. I think a really powerful argument that you have is if you wait a little longer, you will see some bigger progress notes, and that might weigh more heavily than the workload. I'm not sure that the workload itself is going to be a barrier. But if the executive team is looking at it on a quarterly basis from an accountability standpoint, and you look at it every 2 years, you know, so we report to you after every other quarter, that might feel like a good rhythm. So certainly not a workload, but I think a couple of times a year, you'll definitely be able to see a little more of a body of work that you can probably get your mind around, and that might help.
Now, for me, I respect and agree in principle with what my fellow commissioners have said. I guess I would like to see the names of, you know, specific, when we have achieved things, what were they? And what were the specific challenges? We do hear about them, budget reports and other things. We hear about the challenges. And we probably know some of the risks, but that would be presumptuous, you know, like how does government affect, you know, federal, state, all of these things that the different governments do, they affect us. And so I assume they're part of the risk and challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I guess I'm just curious about how you see them, you know, more specifically. So, but if you want to do it twice a year, that's fine.
How about we do this? Scott is right. It's not a lift for me to bring you a quarterly report because I'm summarizing what I already have. I'd like to bring you a Q4 report in January because that is when I would, if we were going to do twice a year, I'd want to do after Q2 and after Q4.
Yeah.
And that lets us do one more kind of refinement of this and what it feels like. And then we can make a tentative plan that says we're going to do twice a year, but have another conversation there.
Yes, I would like to, after, let's say, we get through 2024, I'd like to have a conversation about is 2 years, is twice a year as a commissioner, does that provide me with a picture of progress? Or do I need to look at it annually? I don't know.
Okay. And we can think about the through line for you as well in terms of how do we connect it through the various conversations so that you're, so we bring whatever we're talking about in Q2, we bring it forward to Q4 as well, so that it's a more complete picture as opposed to a quarterly snapshot. Well, I'm not sure that I'm articulating that right as well as I want to, but conceptually, we can find ways to provide you updates that give you a more complete picture rather than just a snapshot of work we did in the quarter.
That, for me, that works.
Let me make sure I articulate this. So we'll stick with the update for January as planned, which will give you a finished picture of 2023. So the Q4 update will happen in January. We'll switch gears from there and at least initially target a twice a year rhythm. So after Q2, which will sometime in around July or so.
We would be here in February and August.
February and August. And then, so that's a Q2 update in August and a Q4 update in February. And then we'll also play with the, sorry, Commissioner Olson. So Q4 wraps up in December. We'll be back to you with that update in February.
In February.
And then Q2 will wrap up in June. We'll be back to you within a month or two after that. Right. So 2 a year. And then I think the other homework assignment was potentially to add some other challenges and risks as we're talking about the initiative, so you get a complete picture of some of the things we're thinking about. Is that a fair assessment on where we are?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything money with water anymore? But another thing that might be interesting, if a team has a great win, mm-hmm. and a great story, you know, it might be nice for them to come with you, and
yeah.
and we can, you know, hear it from them, and also we can, you know, thank them for their hard work. Because I think that's going to be really, it's going to be fascinating, I think, for the three of us to see what comes out.
That's the kind of thing really that I was kind of wanting, is let's hear, you know, what people are doing.
Yes.
Specific, and these are like under on the slide 12, create the culture, and all of that is very nicely worded, but
what does it really mean?
Huh?
Sorry.
No, I think that the major heading under the objective is probably all I need to see on that, not all of the detail. So here I'm saying more detail, less detail.
Yeah.
I'm probably not communicating very clearly.
We will find our way to the thing that
yes.
feels right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So along with that, the other piece that we're doing is this kind of just paying attention to overarching strategic considerations and concerns. Is the world changing, or our operating environment changing in such a way that we need to revisit the strategic plan in a more fundamental way? So that is part of the ongoing conversation about it, and we will bring you those conversations when things pop that feel like they're, you're already hearing about them anyways, right? Same conversation, et cetera.
Well, we're hearing about them in a variety of reports.
Yes.
And at some point down the road, the interaction with the budget and executing these things, I'm not quite sure how that would happen, but there is a direct link.
Yes.
So, I'm just thinking, don't pick that up as an ask.
It's all good input for as we think about how to refine this moving forward. Okay. You articulated our agreements here. I won't redo that. From a next steps perspective as well, at the request of John Harlow and the ELT, the divisions are working to develop overarching operating plans that look out over the next couple of years. Those plans will be much more from the perspective of that particular part of the business, and will incorporate strategic initiatives that they own in whole or part, and then interweave those with the other operational work that they have going on to implement the, you know, the capital plan, the water plan, the integrated resource plan, maintenance planning, that type of thing. And those will similar, way more so than the strategic plan, be living documents, right? It's a plan that will look at, next year's 24, 25, and a little bit into 26, and then roll forward as work gets done and reflect those realities. Mm-hmm. So we just wanted to make you aware that that effort is happening, and that it is just getting off of the ground, with a couple of divisions kind of being our pilot boats, heading out into the process to see if the templates and the process that we're putting together works. We're targeting end of Q1 2024 for sort of substantial completion. And I'll leave it to John to determine what updating to the commission on those looks like.
You've referred to all of this as being in flight, and I'd like to say we're trimming the sails.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, Commissioner, I did have an observation. I don't need an answer on this, but on this slide, I got down to the bullet on the right, alignment and integration with a new enterprise project governance board. Critical. And you've discussed, staff has discussed this before, but
yeah.
I'm really, really, really pleased to see that.
We are excited to have it up and running. It's great.
Oh, it's critical. Our enterprise systems.
And integration as well with the financial planning, both on an annual and a 5-year forecasting standpoint. So that's sort of the bulk of the sausage making update. The remainder of my slides are about our kind of 2023 activities and accomplishments report. To your point, Commissioners Logan and Wolf, I'm not the one doing this work, and so I'm not going to speak to it in detail. I do want to note that some of this work either comes to you on a regular basis around SnowSpark grant, Connect Up, et cetera. And so you're seeing those, and I'm just noting that that's an accomplishment that relates to this objective. And other pieces of this work will be coming to you as it moves further through the process. I'm not going to present this to you. This would be much more of sort of like the reporting that you get from Sarah and other parts of finance that is an update to you summarizing that, I guess.
I think these framings are helpful. Like priority one, you know, reminder that that's what this is.
So I've taken a note that for future versions of this, you would like us to talk, you know, about strategic concerns and considerations or risks for, you know, at a level that makes sense here. Yes, and then also trying to take that through line so that as you go from update to update, you can link current update, current reporting to past reporting and see that progress all the way through. From that standpoint, do you have any questions on any of these reporting slides for the five priorities?
I don't.
Do you?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
This has been very helpful.
Okay. Any other questions for me this morning?
All right, let's talk just really quickly before we wrap up, and then we can field questions. But this, Commissioner Olson brought up the budget constraints, and a couple other people mentioned too, and just the integration between this and the budget. Be patient with us. We've got multiple things in flight right now that are all going to kind of land in the same place. We're working on standing up an enterprise risk management program. Laura's been working on strategy now for a while, and we're kind of getting into the implementation and operating plans there. We're on the front end of standing up an enterprise project governance program, which, again, that was the thing you referenced earlier, Commissioner Olson. It's a more comprehensive look at the work that we're doing, trying to piece together the strategic priorities, the enterprise risk management priorities, the other priorities and resource management that we have, all to kind of address this, what are we working on and why, and make sure that we have a good articulation around that. So all of that stuff, a lot of that work is in flight right now. And so you'll see over the next, you know, budget or two cycles, how some of these things will integrate a little bit better. I mean, our goal is to have budget line items that really can be tied to a variety of these different things down the road.
I understand that. I understand that absolutely. But this is the first time this has been attempted more than once. And it is extremely, extremely difficult. It takes a lot of diligence and effort and commitment to doing it. But as a policymaker, that will provide me with a lot of information at the policy level and to see the it's all interrelated. And the work that you're doing is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really critical. It's what we realized is it's very difficult to articulate what our priorities are if we don't have our arms around all the work that's being done, how it relates to strategy and risk management and all these other things. So Laura on strategy, we've got Serena that's working on enterprise, and with Christy and Doris Payne and others working on the enterprise project governance process. We've got Angela Johnson and others working on enterprise risk management. We've got some really smart people looking at all these things with a end game of having them interconnected in a way that we think will help do some really good operational planning and prioritization for the organization. So in flight, patient, we're headed that direction.
Oh, yeah, 2 budget years. Well, maybe more. It's extensive. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you.
Go. I'm done.
Oh, keep going. Well, I just want to say that if there are some ways that we can provide any input to you or help from our own different backgrounds and levels of knowledge, et cetera, please call on us.
You know, I would just say again on finance, you know, this is an investment in our future, our future for our customers. The utility. So you know, I know things cost, but this will be savings, financial savings, but also better outcomes. So,
yeah.
It's great work, and it seems so authentic. Appreciate that.
You're welcome, thank you. There's been a lot of people working on this. I just happen to be the person standing here this morning. So we'll share the credit with all of them. Any blame for the typos in the PowerPoint are exclusively mine.
Well, a lot of people have been working on it, but no one harder than Laura. So Laura and Kim and others deserve a tremendous amount of kudos for this. This has been a long process. And Laura has had the privilege of cat herding a lot of executives and debates and dialogue.
That's a privilege.
Yeah, it's a privilege, Commissioner Olson. I'm sure Laura's felt that way.
She's
exercised extraordinary patience, I'll say that.
I had a joke the other day that we've been on a journey of 1,000 suns since we started, and then realized that the math almost actually works out for that, because I was here in December of 2020 when we launched into trying again to develop a strategic plan. So it has in fact been a journey of 1,000 suns, and it's been amazing, and I'm privileged to be working on it on your behalf and the district's behalf. So I will see you in February for a Q4 update, and we'll confirm that we like the quarterly plan, and we'll take into consideration all of your thoughts and comments about what you'd like to see in the future to try to make these meaningful for you and the community members that are listening.
Thank you.
That's all we have on our side, commissioners. Thank you.
Okay, it is now 10:43 a.m. and the meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m.